You know how sometimes you listen to a story and it just sticks with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's that human drive, isn't it?
Yeah.
To find answers, to piece together the past. It really gets under your skin sometimes.
It does. It reminds you history isn't just, dates and events, it's people.
Exactly. Individual lives, incredible stories. And that's really what we're digging into today, the echoes of a mission from March 10th, 1969.
Right. And if you've seen episode 58, Papaya 02 AB Rescue, the rest of the story on the Military Tales YouTube channel.
Which is fantastic, by the way.
It really is. It gives you a real sense of the narrative we're exploring even deeper now.
Yeah, that episode with George Merritt's firsthand counts and Susan Crosby's, well, amazing research.
It's compelling stuff, really forms the core of what we're unpacking today.
Definitely. So we're going to zero in on the downing of this plane, NE-4D, near Chaponne back in 69, and the search and rescue that kicked off right away.
But not just the timeline.
No, not just the timeline. We want to understand who these pilots were, their backgrounds, and this really extraordinary decades-long quest to find out what happened to one of them.
A quest that's still ongoing in many ways.
Right. So our mission, if you like, for this deep dive, understand March 10th, 69, the immediate rescue attempt, and then this incredible journey to find the missing pilot.
Okay, let's do it. Starting with George Merritt. He was right there in the thick of it.
Yeah, George Merritt, what a career.
His name carries a lot of weight in aviation circles. I mean, his path, it's
Excellent.
pretty remarkable. Started in the Air Force RC program, then UPT at Webb back in 59.
Flew F-101s, the Voodoo, right,
Yeah.
with the 84th Fighter Interceptor Squadron.
Yep, interceptors, then test pilot school at Edwards. Imagine flying the F-11, F-5, F-4, F-104.
Just an incredible range of aircraft. And that wasn't even, the end of it. He saw combat.
Right, with the 62nd Fighter Squadron, U-Dorn, then NKP, flying the A-1 Skyraider.
The SPAD, such
Yeah.
a legendary plane for close air support and rescue escort.
Absolutely. And he flew 188 missions in it. Think about that. 188.
Wow. And after that, another 2 decades as a test pilot at Hughes Aircraft, F-14, F-111B, F-4 again.
Retired in 89, started the Warbird Museum in California, and he's still flying today. An L-5 Stinson.
Incredible. And written 6 books. So yeah, when that call came on March 10th, 1969, he had a fair bit of experience under his belt.
You could say that. On that day, he was Sandy Led at NKP.
Explain the Sandy role quickly for anyone who might not.
No, basically the on-scene commander for search and rescue, coordinating everything in the air, directing the fighters, the choppers, the whole nine yards.
And flying a typical SAR setup.
Yep. General survival gear was standard issue. Boots, cotton flight suit, helmet, vest packed with essentials, 2 radios, extra batteries. You had to be prepared.
So the day starts with a scramble.
Yeah.
This F-4D Phantom, NE-4D, from the 435th at Uban.
Right, part of the 8th Tactical Fighter Wing.
They're on their 5th pass over this target near Chaponne, a Peel storage site, and truck park. And they get hit.
The crucial initial report was 2 good shoots, both pilots ejected, confirmed visually, even had brief radio contact.
Okay, so initial hope, at least.
Definitely. The flight out to the crash site for George's team was quick, maybe 4 or 5 minutes, but the conditions.
Ah, the visibility problem. End of the dry season.
Exactly. Haze, smoke, just thick, up to 10,000 feet in places, made spotting anything incredibly difficult. Must have been tense.
So they get there, and what's the immediate assessment?
Well, they talk to the FAC, the forward air controller, and the news isn't great. The front seater chute vanished. And radio contact lost.
Oh, man.
But the backseater, Al Rutina, he was still on the radio, still talking.
So, immediate priority, get Rutina out.
Absolutely. Fast movers, the fighters, came in to suppress ground fire, dropped ordnance around the area.
Standard procedure to clear the LZ.
Right. Then George, as Sandy Led, does a low pass himself, checks visually for any active threats.
And then this unusual request, CBU-19.
Yeah, juice of fruit, disabling gas. The idea, controversially, was to use it sort of like a smokescreen,
Yeah.
create cover for the helicopter pickup.
Do they use it?
The accounts vary, but the focus quickly shifted to the extraction itself.
And the Jolly Green went in. The HH3.
Yep. And they got him. Al Rutina was picked up successfully.
Huge relief, I imagine. One guy safe.
Massive relief. But the front seater, Papaya 02 Alpha, nothing.
No radio, no visual.
Nothing. They circled, listened on the guard frequency, the emergency channel. Silence.
Yeah.
Eventually, they had to head back to base.
Just devastating. Leaving someone behind, even when you have no other choice.
Yeah. And at that point, George's focus was, understandably, on the successful rescue. One man recovered, the full story, the other half of it. That would come much later.
Years later, when he connects with Susan Crosby.
Exactly. And her investigation, it's something else entirely.
Let's talk about Susan. Her motivation is just, wow.
Yeah.
Starts when she's 14.
Yeah. Her mom was a VA nurse, gave her an MIA bracelet, Colonel Carter Luna.
Imagine carrying that name with you for years, that sense of connection.
It clearly stuck with her. And her background in law enforcement as a detective, she applied those skills to this.
Colonel Luna. Pilot with a 435th at Ubon, same squadron as the plane, NE-4D, lost March 10th, 1969.
And there's that last known photo of him taken at Ubon.
So Susan starts researching. Where does she even begin? She said she didn't even know where Laos was at first.
Right. Started with internet searches, basic stuff, but it snowballed.
Into something much bigger.
Much bigger. She started talking to people, Al Rutina, the rescued backseater, other pilots who flew with Luna, and then George Merritt.
How did she connect with George?
Found him on Facebook, actually, after reading his book, Cheating Death.
Social media connecting people across decades about events like this. It's amazing.
Isn't it? These direct contacts gave her perspectives you just don't get from official documents.
Speaking of documents, getting official records, especially military ones, is notoriously hard for civilians, right?
Extremely difficult. Bureaucracy, redactions. But somehow, she managed to get her hands on the actual search and rescue log from March 10th, 1969.
The minute-by-minute account of George's mission.
The very one. A huge breakthrough.
What did she do with it?
Put it all into an Excel spreadsheet. Decoded the military jargon, the abbreviations, figured out the radio systems, the beepers they used, really analyzed it.
She also looked at DPA reports, the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency.
Yeah, but those are often heavily redacted, names blacked out, so she had to cross-reference, find other sources, maybe unredacted versions, to fill in the blanks. Real detective work.
So after all this digging, what did she conclude was the most likely scenario for Colonel Luna?
Based on multiple sources, including accounts from former North Vietnamese Army soldiers documented in those reports, it seems likely Colonel Luna survived the ejection.
Okay.
But was tragically killed later that day. The accounts suggest he encountered NVA forces on the ground, confronted them with his sidearm.
His pistol, yeah.
And was shot, reportedly with an AK-47, and then buried nearby.
Just gut-wrenching. Surviving the crash.
Yeah. It highlights the danger even after getting out of the plane, and it underscores the work DPA is still doing.
Trying to find remains, get answers. It's painstaking work, isn't it?
Incredibly complex. Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam. Specialists digging, sifting, years, decades later. Environmental factors, time. It's a massive challenge.
For Susan, this became deeply personal, didn't it? Especially after reading the MIA letter sent to Luna's parents.
Absolutely. She said that's when he stopped being just a name on a bracelet and became a real person with the family who lost him. That fueled her determination.
And she didn't just research from afar. She went there to Laos.
Three times. Went to remote areas, knew his last known location, met locals, hired drivers, translators, talked to village chiefs, elders, trying to find anyone with information.
Did she find the spot? The last known position.
He believes so. A cassava field near part of the Ho Chi Minh Trail. She even confirmed the GPS coordinates.
Wow. He also visited other crash sites from the same day.
Yeah, Krogman and Cogdell. Airmen lost on the same date. And it highlights how long recovery can take. Krogman's remains weren't found until 2019, identified in 2020. Cogdell's site found in 94, identified the same year. Decades.
Just shows the persistence required. And she found details about Luna's actual plane.
The F-4D, serial number 722, found a photo online. And get this, it was previously flown by Robin Olds.
Robin Olds. Mm-hmm. The wing commander, Mr. Mustache himself.
The very same. Small world, isn't it?
These details make it so real. What were her impressions of Laos itself?
She painted a vivid picture, didn't she? Rice paddies, caves, though she didn't go in motorbikes everywhere, rugged terrain.
And the legacy of the war. Unexploded ordnance.
Yeah, a constant danger. NGOs doing vital work, clearing it. She mentioned the local culture, too. Beer Lao, guest houses.
And visiting that village, Bangkok Mok, near the site. Talking to people there?
Yes, the assistant chief, elders, kids, exchanging gifts, seeing remnants of war like a crater, items made from bomb casings. It's all still there.
The history is just embedded in the landscape. She mentioned the numbers, too, the statistics of the missing.
Yeah, sobering numbers for the whole war, and specifically in Laos. And DPA's ongoing recovery stats, it puts the scale of the loss and the effort into perspective.
And Colonel Lena hasn't been forgotten institutionally either. That training center named after him.
Right. The Physiological Training Center at Peterson Air Force Base. A lasting tribute.
Susan's motivation.
Yeah.
She feels it's her purpose, doesn't she?
Seems that way. Driven by this need for answers, she maintains websites, helps families and vets visit, even writing a travel guide.
That's incredible dedication. It must cost a fortune, personally and financially.
The airfare is the big one, she said. Ground costs in Laos are lower, but the planning, the time, it's a huge commitment.
Let's circle back to George Merritt for a moment. His reflections in that Military Tales piece were really powerful, especially about writing his book.
Cheating Death, yeah. Wrote it over 7 months, finished just after 9/11, got the contract with Smithsonian Press in early 02.
And that story about getting the cover quote from Robin Olds.
Huh, yeah. Olds being reluctant, the manuscript maybe under Christmas presents. It's a great little anecdote, shows the human side.
George's solution was smart, though. Offering to write some options himself.
Very strategic. But what Old sent back wasn't just a short quote. It was 127 words, practically a foreword.
And a powerful one. About the Sandy and Jolly Green crews, their bravery, that bond.
Exactly. Old's really captured that spirit, the sacrifice, the commitment to bringing people home.
And George sees Susan's work as embodying that same spirit, doesn't he?
He does. He sees her as continuing what the Sandy Cruz did, going to incredible lengths for someone you don't even know, out of duty, out of compassion, making sure they aren't forgotten.
A beautiful connection. So wrapping this up,
yeah.
What are the big takeaways for you?
Well, first, the sheer bravery of that initial rescue mission back in 69. Under fire, terrible conditions, incredible skill.
Yeah, definitely.
Then the sad reality of Colonel Luna's likely fate, the mystery that remained for so long.
And Susan Crosby. Her dedication is just unbelievable. Decades of work.
Truly extraordinary. It really hammers home the human cost of war, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Families, the memories, the need to remember the missing.
It really does. And it leaves you, the listener, thinking, how many other stories like this are out there, untold?
Yeah, and the power of just one person deciding, I'm going to find answers. That determination to seek truth, closure.
Maybe it makes you think about your own connections to history, you know?
Yeah.
Any unanswered questions lingering there? It's powerful stuff.